Overkill, profusion, excess, surplus, too much, abundance. When it comes to the body of Christ, God is just a big show-off, heaping spiritual gifts on his people in an embarrassment of riches.
I'm Laura Pace.
And I'm Jessica Denny.
You're listening to Embarrassment of Riches, where we explore the wisdom, passion, power, and grace that God has showered on the women of Dallas Bible.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Embarrassment of Riches. This is Laura Pace starting out awkwardly.
Good job, Laura.
Thanks. If I address the awkwardness, is it less awkward or more awkward?
More awkward.
Okay,
more
thank
awkward.
You. Yeah, appreciate
that's
the
Lindsay
honesty.
With us tonight.
Oh, yeah, that would have been important, too.
Yeah. We've got Lindsay Coe with us tonight. Hey, Lindsay.
Hi.
I'm still stuck on the intro. I'm still back there.
Because no, it's let it go. It's fine. It was better than my first try or the last one that we erased.
Can we erase this one?
Sure. Stop talking for a second.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Embarrassment of Riches. We're so excited you're listening, and we're very excited to have Lindsay Coe with us tonight.
Hello.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
I just had a redo on the intro, and I'm very excited about it.
So it was almost not awkward, and then more made it awkward.
Yeah, but
I just like honesty.
It was less awkward than the first one.
Yeah, the first one was real bad.
So I have seen Lindsay before. Yes. I don't know if we've actually been introduced, but you know Lindsay from...
So when I first came to Dallas Bible, we were there for the summer, and then I did a fall Bible study. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were in my Bible study, and I loved you. And we were with Annie, our leader, sweet Annie Mooney.
Yes, the best.
And so you were kind of with me in that period mm-hmm. where I was talking about
adoption
a lot before everything happened. Yeah. So that's crazy that that's been mm-hmm. over a year and a half ago. Yeah. And I remember the first day, I thought, this girl is so pretty and teeny tiny and petite.
Yeah.
And then you said you were pregnant. And I'm like, life's not fair.
It's not fair.
That's what I thought.
Yes. Yeah. So I was pregnant. And then you adopted a few months later,
yeah.
I feel like.
And you allowed, that was a neat time. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us just about you, because we don't know each other well.
Yeah.
So I'd love to just hear about your basic bio, story, childhood, mm-hmm. and kind of what has gone on in your whole life
whole
to
life.
This point.
Give us the life map.
Okay, I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I am a middle child. I feel like that's important.
Whoop, whoop.
Yes. And all my family still lives in Tulsa, so I'm the one that moved away. Mm. I went to OU.
Okay.
And did you go to LSU?
Yes. So I did my undergrad at OU, and then I went, I was an accounting, and you do like an extra year for your master's. So most people just stay at their school. I went to LSU, which is very random, but I loved it.
What made you decide to do that?
Just, you know.
Go Tigers.
Yeah.
Just go Tigers.
Someplace else? Just a different place?
Yeah, just
I'm
a different.
LSU fan.
Yes,
I'm
just a different fan. Just a different environment, something different to do.
There's something more out there than Oklahoma?
Yeah, when I went to college, I wanted to move somewhere else, and it was just, you know, I was told I was going to stay in Oklahoma, and then when I wanted to, I could branch out, and so I went there, which ended up being a great thing. It was very different than Oklahoma, and that's how I moved to Houston, where I met my husband. So I feel like without LSU, I wouldn't have met my husband.
Different how?
Yeah, it was very different.
It's a state full of just Denny's.
It's a whole different culture down there, I just feel like. I mean, it's great. I had a great time.
They're high timers.
I don't know if I would have survived undergrad there mm-hmm. because it is like a different party culture and tailgate culture. Mm-hmm. And so... But it was good.
I would have done just fine there, I think.
Yeah.
I think you might have...
I mean, you may not have graduated.
No.
You might have got a solid 0.9.
Yeah.
No, I think I could have probably even done better than that.
Yeah.
And by better, I mean like lower. Grades.
Okay.
I'm drinking more.
That 0.09 I'm always throwing out might have happened at LSU.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, definitely.
And so, childhood in Tulsa, what was it like at home?
It was great. I love Tulsa. My parents... got divorced when I was 14, so I always talk like I don't remember a ton of my childhood, but I just, it was great, and I loved, you know, I love Tulsa. Now I go back, and it's so small town compared to Dallas, but I actually try to convince my husband to move there.
It's such a cute town, though.
Yeah, it is.
I have a bunch of family there. And
you
it's
do?
Such, yeah, and it, yeah. I'm a, almost all of my family's in Oklahoma, and it's such a cute town, and Kaylin, my husband, always said, like, likes the organization of
it. Yes, it is. It's like, I was actually thinking that today. It's like, when you learn to drive, it's like, my dad would explain how roads go, and they go in order, in alphabetical order, and numerical order, and they're on a grid, and here, I was just like, I don't know how people learn to drive in Dallas.
Yeah, I got lost.
What, especially downtown, it's like,
yeah,
this doesn't even run north and south,
no,
east and west. It's
why
swerving.
Is it curving? How is it touching the same road twice?
Yeah.
On this one street. Yeah, that's stressful. Yeah. So, I don't want to over-assign a title to your experience, but it's interesting. Jess and I were just talking about how you, Jess, will say there are pieces of your childhood that you don't remember when something kind of hard or big happens. It's like pieces go a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that is like you pre-14.
Yeah.
That some pieces are just a little fuzzy.
Yeah, they're just fuzzy. I know I had a great childhood. You know, I love my parents. I'm close with both of them. But I do remember like things after my parents got divorced more. So
kind of
things
just come into focus.
Yeah.
I think 14 is a, I mean, any age for divorce is hard, but 14 is a really hard, those are kind of some formative years for a kid to go through a divorce.
Yeah.
And figuring out who you are and where you belong. And then when life is a little not what, or it's that you don't have the,
your foundation
shifting a little bit. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I think that has something to do with it. And, you know, none of my other friends' parents got divorced, so it's kind of, it was, you know, very different than everybody else.
Yeah.
But.
So I may have checked out for a second, but you're the middle of a boy, girl?
Yeah, I have an older sister and a younger brother.
Okay.
Yes. And then I do have a much younger sister from my dad and my stepmom.
Okay.
And so like, she's 12. But
and your brother and sister that are closer are
in Tulsa.
In Tulsa still. And do you have a good relationship?
Yeah.
Close relationship where you talk regularly?
Yeah.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
That's the great part about being a middle. you're close in proximity to both of them.
Yes.
I'm a little biased though.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been at DBC?
We have been at DBC for three years. We're coming up from our 3-year anniversary.
Okay.
It was in the summer. We moved here 3 years ago, and we were living in a hotel for 72 nights. So I say 72 nights because we moved here without a house and just thought we would find a house really quickly.
Uh-huh.
So DBC was actually close to the hotel, and so we started visiting, and just we fell in love with the childcare, and that was our first thing, is that we loved Dawn, we liked, you know, just feeling like our daughter was safe.
Oh, it's not to love Dawn.
And I mean, our daughter was 10 months old, so it was like dropping, you know, your first baby off, and we just felt like very comfortable with it. And so that's why we initially stayed, and then we've just really loved the community there and the friends.
Dawn was the first face I met, first staff person I met, and my kids are bigger, so they're not even in her area, but it was like, gosh, like, I sure felt welcome.
Yeah, she just, you feel like she just is in the place she's supposed to be.
Oh, she absolutely is, yeah.
And she makes you feel comfortable, so, yeah.
Like, I wonder how many people were like, they're like, Dawn Mooney, the best, best first impression you could possibly have standing right there, so.
And right away she introduced me to another mom that was out in the lobby. It was like, oh, she's new, and she's like making connections, so she's great that way too.
She is, she's amazing.
Well, how did you come to faith? Did you grow up in the church? Did you
So I grew up Episcopalian, so I've been listening to the podcast a little bit. A lot of people grew up Catholic, so
you're not branching out like almost Catholic, but no
pope. No confession, you know. So we grew up in like a really small church. Like, it's not even there anymore, but I drove my husband by it one time, and he was like, I mean, you can pass it and not even notice it. So there's only like 10 kids in the church, and I was one of three. So we're, you know, a big part of that. So I grew up like not liking going to church. Mm-hmm. And so I would try to like spend the night at friends' houses. And mm-hmm. we didn't go to church because we went to church every Sunday. It was like, it was mandatory unless I was doing something else. So I just didn't really connect with church. And then my parents got divorced and we didn't have to go to church anymore. Mm-hmm. And so then I never had a connection with like loving church. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was always like, I believed in God and I believed in Jesus, but I never like connected with mm-hmm. it. So, so then I went through college and I didn't go to church like at all. And then I moved to Houston and just all of a sudden I was like, I need to go back to church. And there was an Episcopal church down the road for me. And I started making Justin go to the church and he was just bored. So he was like, you know, it's like, there's not much, you know, action. Mm-hmm. So we started going to another church with great worship service. And so we started going together and then we moved to San Diego and connected into a church there. And it was more of like a charismatic, evangelical church. And, we connected with a lot of people and really learned like about having a relationship with Jesus mm-hmm. and, the Holy Spirit and everything like that. And that church to me has a lot of faults, but they really do bring a lot of people mm-hmm. to Christ. And, so I just still was kind of in that, I don't really believe, like, I mean, I believe, but I don't have this relationship and I don't really understand praying and all this stuff. And so, then I had a miscarriage mm-hmm. and, connected with the pastors at this church and they really just poured into us and helped me learn and helped me heal. And I felt like I really leaned on praying and really that's when my belief came. It wasn't a moment like, you know, Jesus is my Lord and Savior, because I felt like I'd always believed that, mm-hmm. but this was when I, like, leaned into it.
Your faith mm-hmm. became yeah. real to you.
Yeah, and so...
And not just something that you're like, okay, that sounds right.
But, yeah, but like, it was really, like...
not just culturally, like, no.
Yeah.
I feel his presence.
I need him. Mm-hmm. It was this, yeah, like, this hole in me that now is starting to be filled a little bit more, and, yeah, just, so we started, you know, so we were really involved in that church, and then we moved here, and I didn't read the Bible. That wasn't part of our religion. Like, it was, you go, and you listen to the sermon, and you mm-hmm. read through the Bible, but I never did anything on my own, and so I see women at Dallas Bible always reading their Bible. You hear everybody, I mean, I feel like half of Dallas Bible has been to seminary, you know, so I feel like I'm behind, but I'm starting to get where I'm craving reading and mm-hmm. knowing more and kind of being envious of people that grew up mm-hmm. always reading and feeling like they need to be in the Word all the time. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, if you listen to the podcast and, mm-hmm. and have heard my background, you know, I grew up Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of that is similar. It's not like I ever, like, was like, no, Jesus is not real. He did not die on the cross. Like, it wasn't like that, but I definitely didn't have the same kind of faith until I kind of came to understand grace.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I went to seminary.
But,
which part of it is because of what you said. I'm like, I'm sort of,
yeah.
like, I'm a little bit envious of all these mm-hmm. people and what they know, and I would like to know that. And, yeah. And I would like, you know, I'm just interested. But one of the things that I think is a huge blessing of coming to faith as an adult
mm-hmm.
is getting to believe the Bible for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, so even though, like, I grew up Catholic and it's not like I didn't believe the Bible, but, like, I don't think when I, like, heard the story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal that, like, that actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, here is Elijah, like, making fun of these prophets, like, mocking them, like, you know, oh, beat your chest, slash your, mm-hmm. like, you know, yeah, surely your God will hear you now, like, mm-hmm. you know, and hit him dousing water on his altar, and then he just, you know, asked God, and mm-hmm. kaboom, and there's those stories like that to, like, read those as an adult mm-hmm. and get to go, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, mm-hmm. like a kid, which that's part of the reason why I love working in children's ministry, but mm-hmm. like with kids, like they always have that wow, but there's also some level of like, you can tell them anything
yeah.
and they kind of believe it.
Yeah. Well, they live in the world of fiction where yeah, it's like, it just feels like a story.
Exactly. But like to hear these wild stories in the Bible and to get to come to a place where I now believe like that legit happened. Yeah. Like God is really big. He interrupts
yeah.
the laws of physics. Mm-hmm. He interrupts the laws mm-hmm. of time. Like that's really amazing. So anyway, all that to say, I think there's blessing mm-hmm. in being an adult that comes to faith, because yeah. mm-hmm. I do think there's some kind of wide-eyed
mm-hmm.
like mm-hmm. awe
yeah.
that sometimes if you grew up in it, you're so used to it mm-hmm. that you forget this is amazing.
Yeah. yeah. Like you get a little numb to the spectacular aspects of those big cool
yeah.
stories.
Yeah.
And you don't, I feel like maybe you don't crave it as much, mm-hmm. you know, like you want to.
You've always had
you want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, yeah.
You don't know what like, it was like without
you need
it.
To like catch up uh-huh. too. So.
That's why I Google a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't go right? to seminary, but
yes.
I sure do Google a lot.
Yeah.
What does the Bible say about?
Mm-hmm.
And then I insert
there
back
you
there.
Go.
It sounds like you and your husband too were kind of on a parallel process.
Yeah, we're on the same level, which I think is great for, it's good and bad, because we are learning together, but you don't, you know, you can't really bounce things off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that true? Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you
mm-hmm.
know? And it's like, we're still
let's
really
Google.
Let's Google.
Yeah,
it.
Let's Google it.
What does the Bible say about
yes.
this?
Yeah. So I feel like we're learning together, and yeah, so.
Tell me quickly how y'all met in Houston.
We started the same job on the same day.
Okay.
So we're both accountants.
Okay.
And he worked for that company for 10 years, and I only worked for it for a year and a half, but we met on the first day, and just quickly.
How soon after were you all married?
We were married 4 years after that.
Okay.
So yeah, so
okay.
it wasn't quick, but
uh-huh.
it was quick dating, and then, yeah, we were engaged 3 years after that, and then married the next year. Yeah.
Now,
so we've been married 8 years.
Now. Okay.
And are you an SAHM?
Yes.
You are.
I had to think that.
Yes.
I had to think too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you
yes.
are. So right now you're stay-at-home mom.
Yes, I am.
And you have two kiddos?
Yeah, I have two kids, almost 4-year-old and a 16-month-old. So, yes.
So you're not busy at all?
No.
Home is not chaotic?
No, it is not chaotic. But I didn't stay home with my daughter. So I always say I'm like a stay-at-home mom by fire, because I started staying home when I was pregnant with Austin, and it was like, here, you have a toddler, and you're pregnant, and then you're going to have a newborn. And, you know, most people, I feel like they get the newborn,
uh-huh.
and they get used to it, and then they, you know.
Were you still working in accounting when she was a baby?
Yeah, so
okay.
she was born in San Diego, so we
okay.
We had her in San Diego, and so we didn't have a choice. Like, everything's expensive there,
mm-hmm.
and so I went back to work, and then we moved when she was 10 months, but I worked for my company in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked from home.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and then went to part-time, and then really part-time.
And then all of a sudden
and
you had
I was just
a
like,
newborn and a child
yes, yes.
at home.
Mm-hmm. So,
how was that for you?
It was really tough. I really, really struggled for first staying home with her, because I felt like I had always found like the joy in like being away from her, missing her,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
coming home to her. And it was like
mm-hmm.
weekends were just so great and nights were so great. But then it was just like, I'm here every day and I'm
mm-hmm.
going through everything. So as I was learning about her, and I felt like she was learning with me as being a mom. And then we had Austin
mm-hmm.
and the transition to two for me was really, really hard.
And you feel guilty, that mom guilt, when you're
mm-hmm.
like, I'm sick of you.
Yeah.
I don't like you
yes,
right now.
I
and I feel so bad about
and
that.
And
you can't
escape.
I said I wanted this.
Yes.
I said I wanted to be home with you more. And now all I want is to be away from you.
Did y'all Downton Abbey fans?
I
haven't watched it.
Okay. So this is reminding me of the grandma. And the grandma in Downton Abbey. At one point, I'm not going to quote it correctly, but it was a pretty funny sentiment. She was talking about, like, how hard mothering small children were, and they said to her something like, Yes, but I mean, you just only had to go down and visit them in the nursery, for like 1 or 2 hours a day. And she goes, yes, but it was every day.
I do remember that, actually.
Yes, but it was every day.
Every day. You have to see
I actually thought about that show recently because I was like, wouldn't it be nice?
I know.
To have a nanny that would just be on call and just whisk them away when I was frustrated.
When you're a little overwhelmed.
But you would still have to, you would still have to do it
every
day.
Yes.
Yes. Sometimes I'm not super empathetic with my husband when he comes home and is at all frustrated.
Yeah.
And
like, he's like,
you've been with adults all day. You're not entitled to frustration at this moment.
This moment. You have much time with them and you have to do it.
When I was staying home, I really loved getting stuck in traffic by myself. Uh-huh. That never happens.
Yes.
But when I had small kids, I was like, oh, what a delight. 30 minutes just stuck here.
Yeah.
I can't go
anywhere.
No one,
you get to listen to something you want to listen to.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Like, oh, well,
think the thoughts you want to think.
Yes.
Yes.
So, and you said transitioning to two was really tough.
Yes. So that was really, really hard for me. Mm-hmm. I was with Presley. I felt like I never had, like, you struggle because it's hard. You're not sleeping, all that stuff. But I wanted to be a mom, and I loved it. I loved being a mom. It was really hard for me to go back to work. Once I was back to work, I figured it out. But I really loved being a mom of one. And I thought I only wanted one. And then with my husband, we just decided it was better to have two. We wanted two. That would complete our family. And it was just really hard. I felt like I kind of like went into it more blindly than I did with the one. And Austin didn't sleep for 11 months.
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that you'll feel like you're losing your sanity.
Yeah.
I mean, you really will feel like you're losing your sanity.
I felt like disconnected from life. Like, I don't feel like I was the same person for those 11 months. I was very numb to life. Like, just kind of going through the motions. He also didn't take a bottle. So it was, like, me all the time. I could not leave him for more than 2 hours. And so I just felt real stuck in those 11 months. And then, so I'm staying home for the first time. And then, like,
you feel anchored there.
Yeah, I feel anchored
times,
there.
And you can't get more than 4 hours to yourself.
Yeah, and it was hard on me. And I felt like, so I started pulling back from friends.
And then when it's like that, and then they're not sleeping.
Yeah,
too,
and then they're not
like,
sleeping, and so you're just frustrated. And he was the worst kind of not sleeping. He would just wake up every hour. So it wasn't like he would wake up. It was just like he just didn't get it. And I was just reading everything, like, what do I do?
You must have failed in one of the baby books.
Yeah, right? That's when I was like, I have to find the one,
and
that is going to work.
You broke him because you didn't follow the rules.
I didn't, Well, with Presley, I didn't listen to any rules, and she
just
did it. And so I'm like, that's what you do with a baby. You just do what you want to do, and they just get it, and he did not.
It's almost like they're autonomous human beings.
It's almost like they're little jerks. That's what I'm
saying.
I know. They know it's going to make
you crazy.
Almost
like you can't control them.
Yes.
That's so, and yeah, I think numb is a great way to describe it because you do start feeling like a zombie just walking, going through the motions. One, because your physical needs are not being met. And two, I don't know. I mean, when I've been through babies not sleeping, there's only so much you can talk about it. And you're like, it's just terrible. So I'm not going to talk about it. So I will just disconnect.
Where does sleep fall on that hierarchy of needs?
Yeah.
Is it like on the bottom row?
I think it should be near the bottom. Especially moms with multiple kids that need to be able to somewhat engage with your other children.
It's fine if you have one and then you're like, oh, I'll nap with them.
Yes.
But no, I'm not going to nap the next day. I'm
well,
not going to get
that. It's
I mean, you still don't do. But.
Okay. So were you good about, I know when I've been through those moments, I get numb and I internalize.
Yeah.
Were you good about reaching out and saying, hey, I'm really struggling, or did you kind of keep it to yourself?
I kept it to myself.
Oh, good. So the better healthy option.
Shut it down,
ignore it.
I tell Laura, I always tell my patients, this is not true, I don't do this, but I pretend like I tell my patients, why don't you try eating your feelings or stuffing them deep down?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Either of
the options.
Why have you tried that?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting though that's our so many people's gut reaction is I don't want to tell anybody what's going on.
Well, it's this weird thing, I feel like, when you become a mom, because it's like, it's the job that's supposed to be natural to you. And so, yeah. So
that's so true.
You know, and you choose it. And so it's just kind of like, okay, deal with it. You see all these other moms dealing with it, so you deal with it. And I always say to my husband, I'm like, I'm a big feeler that doesn't talk about feelings. So I have all these feelings, and I live on feelings. You know, he's like a logical person, but I don't talk about
Are you an Enneagram person?
Well, I hear you guys talking about the Enneagram, and Christy's
When big does Christy on it. Diagnose you as?
Well, I've taken the test.
Okay.
So I think I know what I am, but I haven't
what
read
What do you think you know
it.
That you are?
A two.
A two. Okay.
So big feelings.
Yeah.
You're on that feelings area.
Yes, and it would make sense because twos like to talk about other people's feelings.
That's right. And you would totally, and I'm like, I'm a two, and so I can totally appreciate feelings in others. I think that they should be vulnerable and share them, and
they are valid.
They're totally valid, and their vulnerability makes them stronger.
Yeah.
And but when it comes to me, I'm like, no, lock it up. Don't tell anybody what's going on, really. You have to look like you have
Stop
it all together.
Stop answering your phone or responding to texts.
That's what I do. Yeah, you know, you've experienced it a time or two.
Just lock it all
up. Yeah, where I'm just like, I'm going to go off the grid for a few days because somebody might actually see how I'm
feeling. Exactly. And it's hard on your relationships to your friends because you do start pulling away, and then it's like, you lose that support system that you need. So it's this vicious cycle.
Yeah, and I can be like, doesn't anybody see that I'm struggling?
Yeah.
Exactly. I haven't told anybody that
told
I'm
anybody,
struggling.
Luckily, if you're friends with the seven, though, it's like being pecked to death by chickens, right?
I will get in there.
I will get in there.
You will answer my phone.
Which Christy is.
Yeah, that's right.
Hashtag me too.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, she is a seven. So, and just to wrap that up, too, it can be hard on your marriage.
Yes.
Because that is the person that you will talk to.
Yes.
And they sometimes have to bear the brunt of all those big feelings that you haven't told.
And they might not be really in tune to that either. Like, what to do with all those?
Yeah. My husband's great at, like, he's very supportive, but he's not a big feeler. So
he
so
can
hard
fix
for
things.
Him. Oh yeah, he can fix it. I'll tell him it, and then he's like, I mean, you can see him going like, how am I going to fix this? And it's like, no, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen to me. And then sometimes I'm like, I don't want you to listen to me because you're just going to try to fix it. You know, so.
I don't want you to fix it, but also I'm going to be gone all day Saturday and I need you to experience my life. Yeah. Except for you couldn't even do that because you have to come back and nurse.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then they're also better for him anyway. So it's like the husband cannot feel what it's like to be.
Nothing makes me feel more inadequate than when I walk in the door and kids are whining and he's like, they didn't do this the whole time you were gone.
It's like they see you and they.
I know. Thank you for that.
That's what Kyle's mom always used to say. Like when Lydia would be whiny, she'd be like, she never does this when y'all aren't here. And I'm like, yeah, because you give her every single thing she wants.
Yeah.
And your undivided attention.
I always just say, yes, they're more emotionally honest with me. Yeah. That's what it is.
That's what it is. You bring it out in them.
One of the things that we like to talk about is just to see how God has uniquely gifted the members of our body. And I know that's sometimes a little bit awkward to talk about, but what do you see as your areas of giftedness where God uses you? Where do you see him show up in you?
So I have heard you ask this question that came in my question. So I've been thinking about this because when I first got that and I hear other people talking about their gifts, I'm like, I'm not gifted.
I have zero.
Yeah. And I remember when DBC, you go through that members class and they're like, what are your spiritual gifts? And it's like, oh, you work in finance, so you should be gifted, which I'm not. Like, that's not something I want to do outside of work. And so I've been really thinking about this. And one of the things that I think that I'm gifted with is that people confide in me. It's just, I don't know what it is. I'll meet somebody and they'll, we'll hang out a couple times and then they'll tell me things that they don't tell other people. And at first I was kind of like, why do people keep doing this? And I feel like that's a gift. Like, it's not a weird, you know, weird thing that people would feel like you're trustworthy. Because I am. If people tell me things, I do not tell people.
You keep it on lockdown, like with your feelings.
Yeah. Just, like, right? just put it in the same place. Right?
Lock this down.
I can keep their feelings in there, too. But, so I don't know what that's going to do. I don't know what to do with that. But I feel like that's something that I hope that God uses at some point. I don't know.
Oh, I bet he already is.
Yeah.
Those are the best kind of friends.
Okay. Yeah.
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 And there are people that just have this innate ability to draw that out of people, and not because they need to, like, store up your secrets, but just because it's like they have an innate ability to see people where they are and where their hurt is.
And, yeah.
And they seem safe and gentle.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, is you have an energy that does feel safe and chill, and that I think that people would be drawn to. I know Christy just sings your praises.
Yeah. Oh,
like, you might not have a guest walk into your home and pound her with questions about whether or not her husband had hobbit feet or was extremely tall or extremely
somebody
short.
Who you've just met may not get your humor right away and may look at you a little bit uncomfortably.
Right, and your husband might have to go, "You're being weird, Sally. She's not finding it funny."
She doesn't get you yet.
Give her a break. Let her walk in the door.
Yes. Yeah. So
I think it can be uncomfortable to talk about your unique giftedness, but I think that you're spot on in that. And so, given those gifts, what would be your big ask prayer, and how God would use you?
Well, I see when you asked this question, I thought of it differently. But I think in that terms, I guess the big ask there is to say, like, well, what is he going to use me for? Is he going to use that for something? I feel like I do have, like, a heart for learning about people's marriages. I love, I love hearing about people's marriages, because I just think everything is, people who are married are always so different, and I like to hear about that. So I feel like maybe that will combine in that way. So I hope that comes with something.
Did I hear that they're starting a marriage?
I keep hearing it, and I hope it's true.
I've heard it's re-engage.
Oh, okay.
Just starting it on a smaller scale at DBC.
Okay.
I've heard it. Yeah, I've heard whispers, and I hope that it's true, because I think,
whispers and rumors and rumors of whispers.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I think that marriage is such a fundamental relationship in your life, and it can really become the lens through which you see so many other things. And I love getting to know people's marriages and their married stories. And when we first joined our small group, that was something every couple, this was pre you guys, every couple got to kind of tell the story of their marriage. And I was this is awesome.
I love hearing people's history. Like, I love couples that have been together since high school. And I love, like, hearing their stories of how they grew up together. I just think it's fascinating, you know, how people, and then I love hearing, like, couples that have been together for 30 years. I'm like, how do you make it work? It's just, I don't know. It's fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. So that's something that
You have already shared with us a little bit about this, but can you think of a time where God has showed up in a big way for you? I know you mentioned that when you had to miscarriage, can you think of another time where he's really showed up and what you learned in that experience?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this one, too.
Is this why you almost didn't come on the podcast?
Yes, it is, actually, because I was, you know, we were talking before how we feel like the people who are the most vulnerable are, you know, what people get the most out of your podcast with. So, yes, that was definitely a big time, because it shifted my life in a good way. But I think right now, when I got invited to the podcast, I was like, well, no, I'm not eligible for that because I am in a struggle. Mm-hmm. It seems like everybody you listen to is like, oh, well, God used me this way, and I'm coming out of it. Mm-hmm. And, like, coming out of that struggle.
Have you listened to mine? No, I'm
just It seems that way to me. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that people, you know, it's that kind of, like, Instagram, mm-hmm. you know, everybody sure. puts their best foot forward, and mm-hmm. so it's like...
Plus our perception of other people.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, I'm in it deep right now. I feel like I went through that 11 months of mm-hmm. being numb. And what I didn't realize when I was in that was that I was very depressed, like mm-hmm. postpartum depression, but I was numbed. I was numbed to mm-hmm. happiness, like to depression, sadness, everything. So when I came
you just
out
didn't
of that,
feel anything.
I didn't feel anything, but it, when I came out of that, I realized that I was like sad and I didn't mm-hmm. know how I'd gotten to that mm-hmm. point. Like mm-hmm. How am I feeling now that I have two kids and I'm starting to get more sleep and I'm coming out of this fog and now this is where my life is. And I was sad. And then I started to get angry about how I had acted for the last 11 months and how I'm acting now. And so my anger was directed towards my kids and my mm-hmm. husband. And then I am very ashamed of that. Mm. So I'm living in like a shame spiral. Like I just...
You got the perfect mm-hmm. cycle going on that yeah. each of those feelings drives mm-hmm. each of those feelings.
Yeah, and that's what I'm learning is that it's like the anger is a result of the sadness and mm-hmm. anxiety, and then you're ashamed because of the way you act. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when I came out of that, I was like, I just stopped praying. Mm-hmm. I felt ashamed because I was like, God doesn't want to hear from me because, mm-hmm. I mean, what can I bring to the table? I've just acted this way for 11 months, I'm still acting this way, I'm getting worse, and it's just, he doesn't want to hear from me. So I stopped praying, and so for about 6 months, I hadn't prayed, and then I just felt this, like, nudge, like, you have to do better, mm-hmm. you have to feel better, you have to figure this out, you look back to the time when you had the miscarriage, and where did you go? You leaned in mm-hmm. to Jesus and your relationship, and you have to do that. So I went to Freedom Prayer, mm-hmm. and...
Oh, I was going to say, I mm-hmm. had that going through my mind.
Yeah, so which is not like me. I don't like to ask for help, mm-hmm. and
I'm
I feel like...
Freedom Prayer right
well,
now.
Well, and I feel like...
Annie and I talked about it.
Well, I feel like with Freedom Prayer, you don't know much about it. It's mm-hmm. just like, oh, Freedom Prayer, sign up. And even when you sign up, there's not...
It feels terrifying.
It is. And but I was actually kind of mad about it because I'm angry mm-hmm. about everything. And I was mad. Like, I'm like, well, nobody's... Like, you don't really get a response except for, like, here's the times you're going to come. And there you go. And then it's like, show up. And there's no... You know, it's only the time and place.
Like
you don't
trust,
know who's going
like
to be there.
A trust
it is a trust fall. And... Mm. Which is not me, but I felt by the time I actually pulled into the parking lot, I was like, this was so good for me because I couldn't say, this person's going to be here and I don't want them to know my problems. Mm-hmm. She didn't give me an option really of too many times. So it's like, I couldn't really talk myself mm-hmm. out of it. And I went and it was people that I know Annie very well, but mm-hmm. like I didn't know the other two women that well. And it was just getting them to pray and I could not pray. So I feel like I made them work for mm-hmm. everything because they mm-hmm. prayed for me. So I felt like that was like the first step. Mm-hmm. So I did that and it was like all these like last 2 weeks it just kind of all these little nudges. And mm-hmm. so then I don't know if you guys heard that. I'm sure you have. But that Plano mom
yes.
that mm-hmm. drove off the highway and I just felt like, you know, there's times when I'm in my car and I feel despair. Mm-hmm. I feel sad and I don't want to be her. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what can I'm doing the prayer. And now I'm like, I don't want to be that girl. I don't want people mm-hmm. to read about me and say, you know, like we didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so then Catherine Lanning's podcast came on and it like took all my strength to just send her a message and say, I just want counselors. Mm-hmm. And she dropped everything to like talked to me and met with me and gave me her counselors. And then I met with a counselor on Monday. And so I feel like God's like just pushing me way mm-hmm. out of my comfort zone to talk mm-hmm. about feelings. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in it right now, but I feel like he's working.
Well, and you're
thank you for telling us that.
So
I'm like,
brave.
That's really brave. And I love hearing people's stories and I'm like, it just, it connects us to you. And the things that you're sharing, it's like we've all felt things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe not to that degree, or it's not that situation, but like we've all been in shame cycles. We've mm-hmm. all been in feelings of despairing, and I think maybe this isn't true, at least it's true for me, but that feeling where I'm like, I feel like I even have to retreat from God, it seems so mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's like we all do that, like Adam and Eve hiding in the bushes thing. Yeah. Like he doesn't know where we are.
That's what, like, I'm
he
like,
can't
ashamed to see, talk
like,
to him,
like
but...
he can't. But it's like we are humans and we know what that is like. And mm-hmm. I thank you so much for sharing that. And it's so grateful that we have this swooping God mm-hmm. that, like, isn't content to let us hide in the bushes, mm-hmm. but will come looking for
yeah.
us.
Yeah, right. And that's what I felt recently. I felt like I was hiding, and it's, like, the sudden, it's very subtle, like, urges to, or, like, pushes, mm-hmm. you know, and.
I was just going to echo what you were saying, like, that we do tend to try to hide, mm-hmm. and I think, like you said, like, you were numb for 11 yeah. months, so it's almost like you were hiding from yourself.
Yeah.
And totally out of touch with how you were feeling.
I was feeling.
And what I love is that you are still walking through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're being honest about it. And that even though it doesn't feel totally real, because you do feel a little bit out of touch with God, which I've been there.
Yeah.
And, but that you are borrowing truth from other people.
Yeah.
That you're letting people work on your behalf and intercede on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And remind you that there's no place you've been that God wasn't there. And there's no place you can go where God isn't going to be there too.
Yeah.
So there's nothing you can hide from him. There's no place too dark.
Yeah.
But we can really convince ourselves, like you were saying, God doesn't want to meet with mm-hmm. me. God doesn't, God, you know, the shame becomes so real that we think that God feels yeah. the same way about us when we stop reaching out and saying, somebody tell me the truth.
Yeah.
And right. I love, the irony of like the things that we do to make mm-hmm. it worse, like mm-hmm. we put that stuff on lockdown, as if God didn't put us in community with other believers to lean on their faith when ours is failing.
Yeah.
Like, when we don't have it, that's what mm-hmm. we're here for each other, to breathe truth
yeah.
to each other, mm-hmm. to keep reminding each other, don't lose hope.
Yeah.
Like, but we, you know, I always tell my addiction patients, y'all don't corner the market on self-destruction. You just do it with style.
Yeah.
We do it with style and flair. We are self-destructive by
yeah.
nature, and thank God that he,
but I, your foresight to see what could be
mm-hmm.
that self-awareness to see what it could become
yeah.
if you leave depression and anxiety and shame untouched.
Yeah.
What it can do to your marriage, the, mm-hmm. just the far-reaching impacts on your kids and
yeah.
and on yourself, and it's okay to prioritize.
Yeah.
Just I want to feel better too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is already paying off.
Yeah,
that stretching yourself into uncomfortable places
mm-hmm.
is paying off, and I think that's a big ask of God to us is that he says sometimes go someplace uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I feel jazzed up that you're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really hopeful.
Yeah. I think that's the other thing that's so scary is, like, I don't want there to be long-term effects on my
mm-hmm.
kids. You know, mm-hmm. that's what it's like. I feel like I can take care of myself. I can figure it out. But it's like,
mm-hmm.
you don't want them to be, you know, I don't want mom to be yelling at you and feel like that's their fault,
mm-hmm.
you know. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I do want my kids to see that I feel and, like, I can cry and I can
mm-hmm.
be frustrated and we can talk about feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But my anger shouldn't be directed towards
mm-hmm.
them. And I think, like, I didn't personally feel like I had friends that talk about
mm-hmm.
postpartum issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to know somebody who's, like, her kids are okay,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
they've been through it, and
mm-hmm.
they're well-adjusted kids. And you always have to work to make sure they're okay. But it's
mm-hmm.
scary, because you're
mm-hmm.
like, well, Presley didn't do anything, you
mm-hmm.
know? She's... you know, emotional and hard, but she didn't do anything to deserve,
mm-hmm.
you know.
My therapist tells me that
My therapist tells me that we only have to be, like, doing it right 33% of the time. Mm-hmm. And the other 66, we could be blowing it. And
that third, I like that she actually put a percentage.
She did. She put a percentage, and I was like, I feel like I could maybe even do 50. She's like, no.
Don't.
Aim for 38. She's like, just aim for the 33%.
Is the 33%, like, I don't know, don't do damage?
No. Like, you can, like, I don't even think the 33% is not doing damage. It's repairing the damage that you did in the 66%. But the idea of what she was saying, which I'm like, I don't know where the 33% came from, but mm-hmm. I'm clinging to that like it's gospel truth.
Yeah.
is that, I mean, and I do think it's true in relationships. Like, we're human and we do damage.
Mm-hmm.
Where we bring health is when we circle back.
Yeah.
And circle back mm-hmm. and circle back mm-hmm. because we're going to keep failing. That's what mm-hmm. we do. But that 33% is a circle back, and that's where you do repair.
Yeah,
that's what one of my former professors, his name is Gary Landreth, and he's like a pioneer in play therapy.
Mm-hmm.
He had all sorts of Landrethisms, and one of his big things was it's not what you do,
mm-hmm.
it's what you do after what you do. That was his big thing with parenting. Is it's not too late.
Okay,
like you may have modeled some negative reactive anger, but you can also model apology and talk about what appropriate anger is and how that's okay to mm-hmm. feel that. So it's never too late to go back and model something positive. So that's what I remember him saying that, and I've clung to that too in parenting. It's like, not what I do, it's what I do after what I do. And there can be so much growth and learning in that.
One of the things I feel like I'm really good at in parenting is letting my children know that nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
I feel like I've really let them know that strongly. Like, hey, guess what? You don't have to be perfect because mommy sure is.
None of my kids will ever be able to say, I never heard my mom apologize because they hear it all the time.
Yeah.
What was I, I can't remember why Kyle and I were talking about this, but something happened and Kyle said something to me. Kyle's my husband. Kyle said something to me about, like, me being very good at apologizing. Like, mm-hmm. you're really good at mm-hmm. asking for forgiveness and apologizing. I'm like, yeah, because I do it every single
day. A lot of practice.
Like, it's all I do.
All I do is
apologize.
In the midst of parenting, when you're also trying to be self-reflective mm-hmm. and growing and meeting with God and all of those things, it's so hard when you just feel like you're avoiding landmines or putting out fires all the time to stop and go, how can I find time for mm-hmm. counseling?
Yeah.
How can I find time for freedom prayer? Or, you know, it's so hard to prioritize that. Yeah. And in some ways it's like, feel easier logistically to just keep shoving it.
Yeah. Just keep doing it and not taking in that time and feeling like the more selfless I am, the better it will be because I'm putting so much more into people. And then it's just, it explodes. Mm-hmm. You can't do that for so mm-hmm. long, and it gets to where it's like you have to spend a couple times a week where you're working on yourself, mm-hmm. or you know,
that was another Landrethism. Another Landrethism was you have to put on he just said it a lot. I don't know if he actually coined it, but that you have to put on your own oxygen mask first.
Yeah,
like they always say in the airplanes, when the oxygen masks drop down, if you're about mm-hmm. to experience some big turbulence or something like that, if you're with a child, you put on your own oxygen mask first, and then you're equipped to then turn your attention to your child and take care of them. And I think the same is so true.
I believe that. Yeah, because it's hard to see that mm-hmm. you have to take care of yourself to be a good
mm-hmm.
mom. So I feel like I'm in that. I'm feeling like I'm starting to turn that corner where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, well, I need to figure out me first. And
And that is the best gift you can give to the people around you, including your children.
Yeah, and my husband. Yes. I feel like, you know, nobody wants to, I mean, it's hard to be with somebody like that, you know, and you just hope that your husband sees, you know, that there is an end to that and wants to help you. And I have a great husband mm-hmm. that wants to do that, so.
And keep reminding yourself, I know in times when I've felt depressed or mm-hmm. anxious, and I struggle with shame is my big mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
I have to remind myself,
I am lovable. Mm-hmm. I can't throw the baby out with the bathwater completely. Like, I am struggling with this.
Yeah.
And I've done some ugly things, but I am still lovable and deserving of
you
love.
You really are.
Thanks.
You really are.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, that you don't convince yourself, I'm terrible, I've ruined everything, and no one is going to love me, or he's not going to love me specifically. But that God put that man in your life because he could handle your cray.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Your unique brand.
That's right. That Kyle can call out from the living room and say, hey, stop talking about hobbit feet, crazy. But love you.
That's right. Now let me show my thumb toe.
Yeah, that's right. Bunion.
That was a special moment. Thank you for letting us know that. Well, I think you're incredible.
Thank you.
And I know that was not
easy. I feel
easy.
Like this is a therapy session.
Well, great. Encourage more people to come on and do what you just did.
Right.
Because that was really special and super, super courageous. So I hope that you'll be able to walk away and not do what I sometimes do and like replay, should I have done that?
Yeah.
Because it was a great choice. Yes. It was wonderful. And we're so thankful for you sharing your heart.
Yeah. And it was such a pleasure to get to know you and know your heart. And it's such a privilege for Laura and I to get to interview women like you and just see how God is using you. And I think that's what he does. I think he uses those hurts to make it something beautiful. So
I hope so. Let's see.
We really are grateful for you. Grateful for just your willingness to come on the show and talk about real things. So thank you so much.
And thank you to all of you. And we'll see you next time.